The Doug and Wolf Show.
The next 4 hours of your life will be outstanding wherever you are if you keep listening to The Doug and Wolf Show.
You're calling your shot.
I'm calling my shot on today's show.
Doug Franz, Ron Wolfley.
You know that's good radio.
Oh, yeah.
Doug and Wolf, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Oh, yeah. There we go, ladies and gentlemen, right now. That's right. Stick the index finger into the air. Hour number one of the Doug and Wolf Show. Savages in the Morning, broadcasting out of Cowbell Friday. Yeah, put the Jordache jeans on, ladies and gentlemen. Stand in front of that mirror on a Friday night because you know the party is not going to be the same without you. Take out that neon comb, my brothers, and brush back that feathered hair. It's the weekend. Party time, brothers. Budget. Everybody's working
for the weekend. For some reason, in the last 2 months, you've been quoting lyrics from the song. I would never side with Paul, but the fact that you've been starting to quote lyrics, it's a fun song to mock.
It is, indeed.
But when you actually start going to so far as reading lyrics, I don't know.
You know, once again,
whoa. You want a
piece of my heart? If you stood on our cellar steps halfway up at 45 Hodson Road, go ahead and Google it, my young crunks, in Orchard Park, New York. You could look right into the bathroom, the only bathroom in the Wolf Lake compound at the time, right there, right? And I'll never forget standing on those steps on a Friday night, watching my brother get ready to go out, right? He was 17, 18 years old, big man on campus, get ready to go out on a Friday night, baby! The Jordache jeans on, the Keith Partridge hair, listening to Lover Boy. And I knew when I was just 12 years old, there was something innately, inherently wrong with that.
I don't know.
And to this day, we still have never told Craig.
And no listener's been rude enough to screw it up,
which we appreciate
greatly. But
stunning.
When the day comes, I don't know how the Doug and Wolf Show will end. Like we're getting ready to start year 13 coming up on January 2nd. It'll be our 12th anniversary. Will be January 2nd, starting year 13. And if they might just walk in one day and say you're done, and we never say anything to you again.
Oh yeah.
But if there's actually a chance that we don't get canned and we leave amicably, we have to have your brother on the last show and tell him.
He'd be okay with that. I think he'd be okay with it. Yeah.
The question is, would you be okay with it?
There was a time, Basinonians, I'm telling you right now, back when we first installed this, instituted this into the show. I will tell you, there was no way in the world I wanted Craig to know that.
I know. No way
in the world. But I think it's grown into something right now where at this point in my life, and I think his life as well, it would be something that he would remember fondly, if you know what I mean.
Okay, good. Good. There is so much on the table today to get to, and we're going to confuse you a little bit, if that's all right.
Not you.
Well, you might be confused a little bit, but as a listener, ever since we've been doing Starting Five, we have always ended Starting Five with number one, and then number one becomes our topic at 6:15.
Well, it makes perfect sense.
And yet, today, that won't be happening.
Okay.
Just to warn you.
It will not be happening.
It will not be happening.
Okay.
And the reason why is this. What ended up as we went through the number one story is something we're going to talk about at 6:30. And the reason why is because of a special guest that's coming in, the mayor of the Doug and Wolf Show. And just like you were reminiscing a second ago about how Loverboy started, for those of you that might not know this, I swear we're only in like month four of the Doug and Wolf Show, something very, very early. It was a little bit longer because it was before an ASU football game. It was a football Friday. So maybe month eight, month nine of the Doug and Wolf Show, something like that. And we're doing a road show in Tempe. And we're there really early in the morning. The show at the time was from 5 to 9. And I'll never forget the bar owner who comes up to us and says something like, and hey, we got the mayor of Tempe coming who's going to declare it Doug and Wolf Day.
Yeah.
Something like that. And we're like, okay, whatever. Okay. And then Mayor Hugh Hallman comes up as the mayor of Tempe, and he reads this proclamation with all the hear ye's and thys and stuff like that.
He loves the thys.
Announcing that it is Doug and Wolf Day in the city of Tempe. And I swear he had no idea who we were and had never listened to the Doug and Wolf show at any moment in his life when he did that.
Yes.
But for some reason, he was completely captivated by you being a wordsmith.
A literateur, ladies and gentlemen.
And then he comes home and finds out that his wife is a diehard listener to the show. And didn't even know that, and somehow decides, okay, I'm going to start listening. And from that point on, he's been a hardcore listener to the Doug and Wolf show. So sure. He was declared, after about year one, to be the mayor of the Doug and Wolf show.
Yes.
And he is a lawyer, and we want a nonpartisan, I'm not involved with the Suns or the city, but I've negotiated these contracts before between a city and a team to come in and look at the actual agreement.
Right.
And who's screwing up, who's not, what's fair.
He's part of the deep state.
And he texted me last night and did the deep state and said,
yes, you know you are, Hugh.
He's bringing in 800 documents that are involved in this. And I thought, are you kidding?
Somebody break out the fan boat.
So he's coming in at 6:30 to talk about this.
We're in the swamp,
and therefore, number one, which I'll let you know now, is Suns. That's going to be the 6:30 topic, but we'll hold you in suspense of what's coming up at 6:15.
It's time for your Arizona Sports Starting Five. You can't go to work without knowing these five huge stories. Here's Doug Franz and Ron Wolfley.
Good morning, Vince.
Number five.
Number five this morning is what happened last night. Wow. Thursday night football, two bad turnovers from Phillip Rivers. Looks like the Chiefs are going to win in a walk-off. And then the Chargers come all the way back, get a pass interference penalty, on my opinion, a ball that was totally uncatchable. But it would have been pass interference if it was catchable. They called it anyway. And the Chargers score a touchdown, down by one. They go for two, and they get it easy. Anthony Lynn said it was a no-brainer.
I told Kim when we got the ball, we score, get your two-point play ready. We're going for it. We didn't come here to tie. We came here to win. And so, to me, it was a no-brainer.
What a game it was last night, Basinonians. One of the best football games I've seen in a long, long time. And it was on Thursday night.
Chiefs have the division record tiebreaker. So right now, they're still in first place. But both teams are tied at 11-3.
Number four.
Number four. Wow, what do you want? An awful lot of ASU stuff. Number one, you've got James Harden.
And now the crowd wants Harden to go for 50. He's dribbling.
Well, he may as well. He's this close.
There he goes. Down the middle. Pulls up. Lays it in. And 50 points for James Harden.
So there's ASU news. Harden with 50. Basketball, you've got the Vegas Bowl this weekend. That'll be basketball. Football, you've got the Vegas Bowl this weekend. That'll be on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. You've got the basketball team at Georgia in an SEC road trip tomorrow. That'll be on ESPN 620 AM. And yesterday, Chris Cartman on Burns and Gambo talked about a new quarterback that signed with ASU.
You need to get...
I screwed that up. I shouldn't say signed. Committed.
You need to give yourself the ability to have options at the quarterback position so that you ensure yourself of finding one guy who's really good for that 3 or 4 years. That's what ASU's done with this addition on top of Yellen on top of Long.
Yeah, this kid that Herm Edwards and ASU went out and signed, offered by Alabama, Florida, Florida State, Georgia, LSU, Ohio State, Penn State. I'm on the train.
Yeah, that's pretty fair right there.
Number three.
Number three this morning. Boy, it's happening again. Coyotes a loser 3-1. So another long streak. Win some, lose some. This is now the fourth loss, and they lose in a matter of about 6 minutes, 48 seconds in, they give up a goal. 7 minutes in, they give up a goal, and they're down 2-0. They lose 3-1.
More on this as the show unfolds.
I don't know. Darcy Kuemper doesn't deserve us talking about him a lot after last night.
Number two.
Number two this morning, T.J. Warren.
Well, we went into the game. Mindset was on 100. Everybody brung it. Effort, energy was all there throughout the game. They made a little run. We responded. So we was composed throughout the game and finished the game with a win, which is good.
T.J. Warren, 11 of 17 from the field for 30. And the defense wins at 99-89. The problem Ayton wasn't good enough to be on the floor by the end of the game.
Have the Suns found a new identity?
I'm not ready to go that far.
Number one.
And the number one thing you need to know about this morning, no matter how many wins the Falcons and Cardinals have, they've still got a national matchup. Julio v. Pat P.
What he's able to do after the catch, the yak, you know, we definitely have to eliminate that. He's just a very, very big, strong, physical receiver. You really have to bring your lunch pail when you're playing against 11 for Atlanta.
That was number two. We'll give you a little snippet of what Robert Sarver said. That's the number one thing you need to know this morning. And then we'll talk Cardinals next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Bring it. Good morning. It's Doug and Wolf here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
My brothers.
New twist to the show today. The number one story on the starting five, we're talking about at 6:30. And a good friend, Hugh Hallman, mayor of the Doug and Wolf Show, will be in to kind of make the complex simple and to help you as somebody that's a taxpayer here in the city of Phoenix. Most of us are, even if you live somewhere else, not all of us, on what to make of what's happened so far. And before we get into Cardinals, there's one piece of news that you really need to hear if you have not heard it yet, so we'll play it for you. With all the talk in which Robert Sarver's threatening everybody that they're going to leave, Jason Rowley came around 2 days ago and said, that's absolutely untrue. The president and CEO said this has not happened. And then one city council member actually recanted in the report that was in the Arizona Republic and said, you know what? I can understand somebody thought it was semantics. It wasn't a threat, but it was talked about. The options if it doesn't go through.
Sure.
Robert Sarver wanted to set the record straight, and he sent out this Twitter message.
Hello, Suns fans. I hope you take a minute to listen to an important message that I want to share with you. First and foremost, the Phoenix Suns are not leaving Phoenix. I'm 100% committed and have been for the last 4 years to find a solution to keep them in downtown Phoenix where they belong. I am a strong proponent, as evidenced by the term sheet that I signed last week, that we should renovate the Talking Stick Resort Arena and once again restore it to a world-class facility. In addition, it is important for the Phoenix Suns to build a first-class practice facility so the players of the Suns and the Phoenix Mercury can continue to develop. I am 100% all in keeping this team right here where we stand. And I want to make sure that that message comes across crystal clear to every one of you. Thank you.
So that'll be our major topic at 6:30, but I wanted to make sure that you heard, okay, there's the number one story that's going on. If you want to, you can download the Doug and Wolf podcast, and then you'll have it. Anytime there's breaking news, you can listen to it on what exactly it sounded like, or if you are not going to be able to listen at 6:30 when we talk about the number one issue with Hugh Hallman, mayor of the Doug and Wolf Show, if you download the Doug and Wolf podcast, you can find exactly what you want. This week, it's brought to you by Kinetico. Both teams are bad. Both teams' coaches are on the hot seat. Both teams are fighting to see who's going to have a better draft pick. But there is one matchup that it doesn't matter how good or bad the teams are. It is must-see television. Steve Wilks on Patrick Peterson staring down Julio Jones.
I think it's going to be a great matchup. You're talking about two of the best at their position. And who knows, two guys that could be future Hall of Famers. But it's going to be a great contest. I know Patrick is excited about the, I don't want to call it a challenge, but the opportunity to be able to cover Julio.
And that's the one thing we have not actually seen Pat P do to the degree in which he did it, obviously, under Todd Bowles and James Betcher. We have not seen him do it as often where the degree in which he would follow a guy and ghost him around the field, it's just not been the same for that. And big reason for that, obviously, is the scheme the Cardinals have been playing. A lot more zone, a lot more quarter coverage, a lot more cover three.
A lot of times when the marquee number one receiver that Pat is assigned to, that he's ostensibly going to be traveling with and shadowing for the entire game, when that guy goes inside, when they move him into the slot, Pat stays outside, just the way the scheme is. And it's cost the Cardinals. Emmanuel Sanders had that big 60-yard touchdown in the Denver game comes to mind. There have been other ones. The opening touchdown to Mike Williams to start the Chargers game after the Cardinals had that 10-0 lead.
That's right, Pollock.
There have been moments where the number one receiver on the other side has moved inside and then got loose. And I'm not exactly sure why or how, but I'm not sure if Pat's going to travel every single snap with Julio Jones or not. I'm guessing not. Based in the past, he has. I know Pat would look forward to it. We asked him yesterday at his locker about this. And if it was actually on over here, it would actually function. But
No. These type of matchups I live and thrive for.
Okay, let's try that again from the top. This would be called take two around here. Here we go.
I'm putting my notes on Tuesday. Yeah, here we go. Best versus the best. So, you know, these type of matchups I live and thrive for.
He's been going against Julio Jones since college.
Let's go to your previous point, though, Paul, because I admit this is an area where my football knowledge runs into a wall. And I have no problem admitting this. It seems like if I'm an offensive coordinator and I can scheme my way out of Patrick Peterson being a problem for me,
Yeah. You
don't have a very good scheme. I understand, my scheme is he stays outside, but as soon as I can get Julio Jones on a lesser player, I don't understand why you would accept that. Now, with the Falcons, at least they've got Calvin Ridley, so if I've got Patrick Peterson on one of the two of them, mm-hmm. I feel a little better about it. But I don't like any system where an offensive coordinator says, I don't like that matchup, and I'm going to make it this easy to change it. Obviously, that's what every offensive coordinator is trying to do. They're trying to find a matchup they like, and that's going to be from now till the end of time. But when it's just, oh, he stays outside, I'm going to go inside, and I've already out-schemed it, change the scheme, right?
Yeah, when you do go inside, though, now all of a sudden you got a better chance of playing in and out on somebody as well, right?
Right. You're hoping some linebacker help.
Exactly, I get it. So there are different things you can actually do to a Julio Jones when he's in the slot in a trips formation, mm-hmm. by way of example, right? They love to actually put him out to the single receiver side. Yeah. They love to take Julio Jones, stick him out opposite of a trips formation to mm-hmm. the left, and stick out Julio Jones to the right. The reason being is because they want you to declare, what are you going to do?
And Larry,
how are you going to play against Julio Jones?
Which to me gives me even more of a reason to say, oh, if you're by yourself, I'm definitely going Patrick over there.
Okay, absolutely.
So I can have my other 10 guys against your 10 guys.
And that will be the case.
I hope so.
I believe.
DJ Humphreys told an intriguing story last night on the Big Red Rage. Under Bruce Arians, they would start every game week with a team meeting. And there would be some basics. Even if you were an offensive guy, you would hear some of the basics of what the defensive game plan was. The offensive coordinator would speak, the defensive coordinator would speak, and to start the game week, DJ said one of his big takeaways as a rookie is James Betcher would get up there before they broke off into meeting rooms, and he'd say, all right, here's the game plan this week, and he'd throw up a slide at the other team's number one receiver. Here's Calvin Johnson. And then he'd throw up a slide at Patrick Peterson. Pat, you got him. He'd start every single defensive game plan on a Monday and say, here you go. And then
it's a good place to start.
Paul, is imagine all the veterans and all the players, they know. They're looking at Pat. I mean, Pat P's, in a sense, getting challenged in front of the team.
Right.
Here you go, Pat.
Well, and DJ,
it's a beautiful thing.
I love it.
I love that. That is different.
Yeah.
That is totally different,
good
by
story.
The way.
And remember what DJ then said. As a rookie, he happened to sit next to Patrick Peterson in the meeting room, and he said, wait, you got him all game? You're going to cover him every snap?
Yeah.
And Pat looked at him and said, absolutely, that's my guy. And DJ said that was actually a growth moment for him.
Yeah, DJ. Guess what? By the way, they're going to put Von Miller over you every play.
You better accept it as well.
Right. Get ready.
You need to look forward to
it,
pal.
Yeah. That's a fantastic story, Paul.
And by the way, Larry said the Falcons have the best trio of receivers in the NFL between Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, and Mohamed Sanu.
Absolutely. Just looking at the perimeter, the talent that the Atlanta Falcons have on the perimeter, it is impressive. There's no doubt. And by the way, I love Tevin Coleman as well, the running back for the Atlanta Falcons. They have real talent. The problem has been their offensive line, for the most part, has been a train wreck.
Yeah.
That's been the problem with the Atlanta Falcons offense.
They've started five different guards this year. The only constants have been Alex Mack, the Pro Bowl center, and then Jake Matthews, and the other three have just been a turnstile all year.
And by the way, I could watch Alex Mack play the game over and over and over.
You don't worry about his education at all?
It's because he's a Cal guy.
Not at all.
Yep.
I don't care about the Cal thing. Just watching him reach the one technique. Are you kidding me?
Making America great again, one Cal alum at a time. I gotta go.
Okay. Yes,
if you're going
you,
to leave us with that, good. Good.
Because there's on right, you have to go.
There's no way that that we want to hear more.
And don't show
quotes.
Up to the plane that charter with your cheap suit on either, Paul.
Join Burns and Gambo starting at 2. They're going to be live from the Fry's on Ray and Rural in Tempe. They'll be on site with Gentleman Jack, who will be giving complimentary bottle engraving on your purchase of Gentleman Jack bottles. For complete details, plus a special discount from Lyft for a safe ride, text Jack to 620-620. There's a very fair question that you might be wondering if you don't spend your entire life following city politics, and that's this. Who can I trust?
Yeah.
When it comes to this arena deal, who can you trust? Well, we've got him, the mayor of the Doug and Wolf Show, who for countless number of times has secretly negotiated other deals between cities and stadiums. So now he's going to negotiate for us. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
The mayor.
Yeah. The Doug and Wolf Show on a Friday. Good morning. And not very often is the number one story not football on a football Friday. But obviously in this city, it is not. With the situation, and I think a lot of you already know about it, but the nine-second recap, Suns in negotiations with the city. They come to an agreement with the city manager. Sounds like the city council is going to vote yes on a $230 million renovation. And then some people say in about a 24, 48-hour period, some of them change their minds. Bam, let's have a continuance, and we'll worry about this in mid to late January, and that's where we are right now. So the mayor of the Doug and Wolf Show, Hugh Hallman, has come in. He is a lawyer, and we want to be transparent. He's a friend of both Wolf and myself, but is somebody that we feel like we can trust, even if we're going to disagree with him on things.
Brilliant,
we feel like we
man,
can trust.
Ladies and gentlemen.
So Hugh, to start things off, give me a number, if you would, of how many times you've been negotiating with a city, with a stadium, with a team. Anytime you've been involved in it, how many times have you done something like this in the past?
I was the lead negotiator for the Cardinals deal when it got blown up oh so long ago, and the stadium would have been in Tempe.
Okay.
For the city.
You.
I was a city council member. No, don't blame me. Blame the city of Phoenix. You want to get into those politics? I'll talk about Skip Rims and Neil Giuliano.
Politics.
They couldn't talk.
Don't want to hear about your politics.
All right. So there's that one. I then worked the deal. I was then mayor of the city of Tempe, becoming mayor of the city of Tempe, and then mayor for working with Artie Moreno to put the keep the team, his team, the Angels, in Tempe. He had given notice and said, Tempe, I'm sorry, I'm leaving. I'm going to Goodyear. I don't know why anybody would want to do that. And
you had to take that shot at me.
I had to take that shot at
But see, now
I'm
everybody
sorry.
In Goodyear doesn't no, know so, it was a no, shot at me. They was, think it was a
Goodyear
shot at them.
Is a lovely, lovely place.
Thank
I'm
you.
Friends with the current mayor, friends with the past mayor, good people all. Yes, it was a shot at you. Anyway, Artie stayed in Tempe, and we put a deal together. And I think I use those two deals as examples. I've worked on others privately. I'm a lawyer. I get paid. I got to be very clear, so I don't talk about what my clients pay
me to do.
But this
is kind of a wheelhouse for you.
I do very complex deals. I just did one in the West Side that was extraordinarily complex. And, you know, there are a couple of stadiums out there. Maybe you can figure out which.
Okay. I wish we had time for that. So now you'll be here to coming up next week and talk about that one.
Don't know what you're talking about.
Let's look at this one. There's so many different realms of it, and we have so many questions, so this is going to be rude, but I want to ask you like 900 questions. Wolf has 900 questions, so I'll keep it moving and just ask
10-minute segment, Doug.
Yeah, that's, I know that's very well said. I just want to know, what do you think? I mean, people that love the Doug and Wolf Show, we say you can trust Hugh Hallman, so when you look at this deal, what do you think?
Negotiations have started. Now, let's talk about the politics and the reason it got rushed. You had a deal that's been negotiated for a very long time. The actual letter of intent is 20 pages or so long. And it's a document that says on its face, this is not binding.
Okay.
Okay.
And I want everybody to know right here in the Auction Community Studios, you are sitting in front of about 800 pages right now. Or?
Well, some people think it's 800 documents.
Yes.
But
to be
yes,
specific.
It's approximately 1,000 pages of documents.
Okay.
It is the original contract, the restated operating agreement to put the deal together for operations.
Okay.
It's the document that said, we promise we'll stay in the facility and we're going to give you all this money and you're going to give us all this money. And then what's called the development and disposition agreement, where they said, okay, let's buy this land and build a building.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the three main documents. And you got an agreement that said, by the way, the Suns get all the advertising revenue and other stuff. It's a massive amount and a very complex deal, and it includes phrases that people say, unpaid priority operating fee payments and interest thereon. Who writes this stuff?
Yes, lawyers.
Right,
exactly.
I do. You do, exactly. Yes, that's why I get paid. Anyway.
You know, let me be specific. If you were the mayor of Phoenix, would you have voted yes on this deal?
If I were the mayor of Phoenix, the deal wouldn't look like this.
Okay. Okay.
So
what's wrong with
it? So here's where I start. The negotiations have now started. We got here because everybody thought this was going along pretty well. Does anybody even remember that this is not the first time the city has put a bunch of money into this facility since it was built? I mean, you've got seven amendments. The Sixth Amendment done on February 29th, 2016. That ain't that long ago, folks. That's $13.4 million. I don't remember you talking about it. I don't remember anybody talking about that. You've got another one.
Yeah, but we'd say to that, Hugh, psh, ain't none but $13 million.
Yeah, exactly right. That's a rounding error for most people like Sarver. July 9th, 2012, that's $7 million to the city and $3 million to the team.
Listen.
Right there, you're looking at $23 million bucks, and nobody even blinked. So
you're saying the city's already been putting plenty of money
in? They've been putting in plenty of money, and they put in half the money to build it.
Okay.
You're talking about one of the oldest arenas in the NBA, correct?
Yeah.
You're talking about that. Well, you know what, Hugh? It's the price of doing business.
You're correct. It is the price of getting a handout.
And the clause says once it's obsolete. And the clause says once it's obsolete and being the second oldest building and soon to be the oldest building, doesn't that come close to the obsolete clause?
So let's start with the politics. The reason we got rushed on this is because we ended up without a mayor elected to the city of Phoenix in the last election. Kate Gallego came out pretty early saying she is not interested in spending a bunch of money. And then she ended up being the biggest vote getter by a long shot.
Mm-hmm.
And folks went, oh, damn, we got to move this before she comes into office. That's effectively, I think, what happened.
Now, if I'm playing devil's advocate, if I'm pretending to be the Suns here, I would think the Suns would argue that and say, this is how all negotiations go, and we had to get to this point anyway. It has nothing to do with Kate Gallego.
Yeah,
mock that?
No, I don't mock that, except that having been elected to the mayorship of the city of Tempe, the city staff and my predecessor jammed through deal after deal because they were sure I was going to blow everything up. The Tempe marketplace is an example. They said I would destroy the marketplace. It was one of the themes about, well, it didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
It was an environmental waste dump. I then had to usher that thing through, but I did it differently than my predecessor would have done. And that's what we're down to.
Mm-hmm.
You've got guys like Jim Waring and Sal DiCicco. They're fiscal conservatives on the council who say, look, I'm not interested in going down these roads. If you want to do a real deal, I'll sit down and talk with you. Well, what does that do for the residents of the city of Phoenix? It gives them some leverage. It's the husband and wife who go into the dealership, and the wife goes, oh, I want that one. And the car guy goes, oh, great, I got a sale. And then the husband says, not so fast. This is a negotiation. And you've got Robert Sarver, who doesn't have a lot of options, and this is where Wolf gets mad at me. He said, gee whiz, you know, one of our options is to leave. Now, was it a threat? You don't need to get into the semantics, but it is one of the things they had to make sure people understood is, as a leveraged point, you got a crappy facility, it's 30 years old, it's maybe obsolete, it's a terrible thing, we can go someplace else.
Why would they deny it to the point they did? Why would they go to the extent of denying
that it was a threat?
That they did.
Because the politics, the
Why
optics.
Why not let that hang? Everyone already understands, Hugh, what's at stake.
No, you understood it.
No.
Wolf,
so
you understood it. Doug maybe understood it. A dozen other people. But what happens
PR
is...
PR matters in this situation.
Yes, they are. And
it
now you've
matters.
Got all
Public
the
people... perception matters, Hugh.
All of the people who want to make sure the team stays now are calling and writing the council saying, if you screw this up, I'll never vote for you again.
And so are all the people out there that don't want
you got it.
Them to
That's
subsidize.
Correct.
So why would you do it?
Because
you
want
to play nice at first.
Those people already. No, you don't. Those people already exist. So by January 1st.
That's the reason why you blew it up.
That's January 1st. Nobody's going to remember this part of the conversation. And now we're in negotiations. The sleeves get rolled up. So that's what pushed the negotiation forward fast and why the city suddenly had to do this in a hurry on a $230 million deal. That's why.
Public relations matter.
Let me jump in. I'm just telling you right now.
Okay? You can sit here and tell me all this lawyering. You're lawyering up right now, right?
I lawyered up for you, pal.
You can tell me all of this, Hugh. But you know what? PR? PR is a little bit different, too.
So
how you go about your business, how you actually do it, how you actually engage the negotiations, it matters.
That you need time, you're going to get it to actually think about the response to that, because we were only going to have you on for one beautiful part of the program, but Wolf can't get all heated, tell you you're wrong, and then have us let you go.
I've got another engagement. I'll talk to you later. Else wants me on air for a longer period of time.
So coming up next, we'll have the PR argument, but I want to get more specific on what should we be asking for here? What's fair to us as taxpayers? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Lawyer and stadium negotiator, and trying to help us make sense of what's in it for us as taxpayers in the city of Phoenix. Good morning. It's Doug and Wolf on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Mid to late January, another vote after 5 meetings with you, the public, in different spots around town. Dates and times have not been announced for you to voice your opinion. And Hugh, one thing that there's a group of people that believe taxpayer money should never be spent on stadiums at all in any stretch of the imagination.
Let's hit that one.
I want to be fair so people know where I come from. I totally support that idea if we're talking about Fargo. Okay, I don't think Fargo should be taking taxpayer money and building an NFL stadium there. I do look at us and I say, okay, the hotel taxes, the rental car taxes, things like that. Then I look at it,
jobs that it generates.
Speaking of spring training,
it generates,
you tell
the traffic,
me we can build a new spring training facility for the St. Louis Cardinals? Let's do it.
Okay.
You know, things like that. Will this make money for the city of Phoenix? Is it an investment that's worthwhile?
Let's talk the big picture, because the second you get into the detail, everybody who's got an opinion on this is, well,
yeah,
and it screams back and forth at one another.
Ron,
you were articulating, you are articulating why it should be here. And I gave you right back some examples of the costs. Here's how you should be going about this and why I'm unelectable, that I can only be the mayor of the Doug and Wolf Show because nobody wants to listen to this noise.
This is good, okay.
You're either zero or one. You're either you hate stadiums and funding, or you love stadiums and it's the most important thing on the planet. Most of the reality is in between all of that.
Because I'm one of those, show me the deal.
Okay.
Is that fair?
So is Sal DiCicco and so is Jim Waring as examples. There are others on the council. The issue is this. Every time you articulate a reason it could happen, there's a reason it shouldn't happen. Mm. And you've got to start working through all of those and say, what are the costs and benefits? Does it generate taxes? Absolutely. We know this from the best example I can ever think of, and that's Disneyland. Walt Disney buys a bunch of property, builds Disneyland, and didn't have the money to buy everything around it. The entire city of Anaheim exists because of Walt Disney, and he didn't get to capture the benefits.
Okay.
It's called an externality in economics. It's the good, positive stuff that happens. The opposite of that is called negative externalities, the crud that happens because you did something.
Crime,
noise, homeless people begging in front of the stadium, all that good stuff. The point is that those things are true in both cases. And the folks who say you should never spend public money on anything, I have to turn around and say, okay, why do we build roads? That's public money.
Yeah.
For whose benefit? Well, you drive the car, don't you? Well, how about Ford Motors also gets to sell a whole bunch of cars because we have roads in this country? Those are positive externalities and negative externalities. We have pollution because we have these kinds of cars. Every time this conversation takes place with somebody who says you should never spend public money, then you have to ask the question, then where would you ever spend public money? And they start articulating why, and you pull those same arguments out and say, okay, the stadium brings us some stuff that we wouldn't otherwise have. And Robert Sarver or Jerry Colangelo, God bless the man who's one of the great leaders of our community, who got this stadium built, got the Chase Field built, and didn't monetize. He's one of the few true business leaders you look at. The guy didn't cash out. Sarver buys a $400 million team that's now worth $1.2 billion. He could build his own stadium, you can respond. The answer is, yeah, he could. And he can also get the city to pay for it. Why? Because the city gets a whole bunch of stuff that we as taxpayers benefit from, too.
I've looked at this point, though, and I've always said, if the Browns can move, anybody can move. So when you say...
Yeah, but it was the Browns.
I get that. But he was a Brown. But
I understand. Yeah, and right, he was also a Cardinal.
The idea is I have no problem with Robert Sarver saying, we can go here, we can go there. The city is the landlord. The city owns the building, and landlords should pay to fix buildings.
Really?
But I totally understand that
Robert... What was the last deal you negotiated over a building? Oh, the answer is, oftentimes the tenant pays. So here's an example of a different deal you could do right now.
Okay.
Today's give solutions.
Today's deal is this: $230 million. You've got the team putting in 80.
Uh-huh.
You got the city putting in 150.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
The city gets back $60 million in potential revenues from leases and all that good stuff, not counting the taxes.
Okay.
The city now says in their paper, because they're advocating, the staff put this together, and they're advocating with good reason. They thought this was a deal the council wanted. They've been working on it for 3.5 years. And they say, gee whiz, in this deal, look at all the tax money that happened. Look at all the restaurants that opened because this stadium got built.
The Big Fries that's going next door.
Imagine that. But what else got built in downtown? Well, let's see. I think we have Chase Field. A whole lot of other stuff happened. What are the other options? You have this crappy old building that's 30 years old. What could happen there? Well, how about on Town Lake, we just sold a set of buildings for $928 million. How about $2 billion in buildings that could get built on that same site that have jobs and people could get employed and all of this good stuff? That could happen too. So don't pretend that this old building is your only option. When you start talking about that, you then say, okay, how do I approach this? You approach it by not giving away all your leverage. If you are panicked and say, we got to have this team, then Robert Sarver has you over a barrel. If Robert Sarver says, I'm stuck here forever, you got him over a barrel.
There's an argument to be made, though, that he's going to have a hard time leaving because of the amount of money he'd have to pay in a relocation fee.
Personally, how would you feel if the Suns left?
I would feel terrible about that.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean that I, as a representative, if I were mayor of the city of Phoenix, I sit there just as I did with the Cardinals and Michael Bidwell. I was a council member leading that team. My mayor wanted the deal, and I got stuck in the middle precisely because I'm the one guy who says no. And by the end of that negotiation, the Cardinals were paying the city of Tempe $16.8 million to get to stay in Tempe. Glendale writes a check for $120 million. What's the difference? Well, it's $136.8 million, but it is leverage, and it's how do you understand the other side of the deal? So the city of Phoenix can understand Robert Sarver doesn't have a lot of options. He had to remind the community he has an option. He might be able to get to leave. You then say, Doug, gee whiz, he'll just grab that clause that says this stadium is now obsolete.
Right.
That's always been the case. The right answer is this was always a 30-year deal. Stop pretending it was ever a 40-year deal because that clause doesn't say the city has to do anything, as the city staff says. What it says is if it's determined to be obsolete, what does the team get to do? Terminate 10 years early.
Hmm. So you don't think the Suns have a legitimate point?
Yes,
legitimate
I do.
Legitimate argument?
But I think other people have a legitimate point. So, Ron, the whole point is you make the argument for why they should stay and why we should pay for it,
yes.
And I'll make the argument on the other side. When Doug comes around and says, no, nobody should pay for this and we shouldn't put in dollars, I can make the argument on your side, Ron. The point is the people who are in the worst position are now 8 council members and mayor. They're missing a person still. And they have 0 and 1 in politics. The guys who come in and defend this get clobbered by the people who hate it. The guys who try to stop it get clobbered by the people who love it. And when a deal finally gets done, all anybody now remembers in this universe in politics today, it's the environment we live in, is why you didn't do what I wanted you to do. 7 times the number of people are going to hate you that love you for doing the right thing. And the people who love you for doing the right thing forgot and they're going grocery shopping instead of out collecting petition signatures.
I got 30 seconds. 50-50? Get the Suns to pay 50-50 and you say that's good for the city? Suns pay everything? Or do you say call his bluff, let him go to Scottsdale, let him go to Vegas?
You're never going to call his bluff because it ain't going to happen that way. But the reality is, how about this? The building is now crappy. Robert, we're going to give you the building. Do whatever you want to with it. Put in as much money and you get to collect all the revenues. There's another example.
I like that.
You could do that deal. Is a 50-50 deal. It's a whole lot closer. And in fact, it matches exactly the deal the most honorable guy in sports in this town ever did. And that was Jerry Colangelo. His deal was a 50-50 deal.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank
pleasure.
You.
Time for Five Star Games.
Five Star Games. Five Star Games. Oh. Five Star Games. Five Star Games. The NFL's best games with Doug and Wolf. Brought to you by Fry's Food Stores. Fresh food, famous low prices. Sign up and save now at friesfood.com.
It's Friday. It's the NFL. We did college yesterday.
You know what? There are no five-star games.
Or it was last night.
Five-star game with Doug and Wolf.
Is there any chance you were wrapped up into the conversation and forgot about five-star
game? A little bit, maybe.
Okay.
Maybe we'll do it again. We'll visit that in an hour.
You know what, then what's fair? That five-star games was not brought to you by Fry's Food Stores. We'll do five-star games later that will be brought to you by Fry's Food Stores. Coming up next, Cardinals, Falcons. There's more on the line than just Week 15. This is actually a 2019 battle. Tell you why next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.